brings us to our Q&A session for tonight. I'm going to hand it back to Heliana, who's going to go over some of the specifics about how to provide us with your questions so that we can provide you with some answers.
Thank you, Riley. So we're now going to welcome questions related to tonight's funding and service topics. We are only taking questions from the Q&A box. So to ask a question, please press the Q&A button in the meeting taskbar and then type in your question. For those of you who are attending in person at the RTC conference room, please write on the piece of paper provided your questions and hand them to an RTC staff member in the room, and they will enter your question in the Q&A box. I see that we have already quite a few questions, Riley. A couple of them are related to if we are going to be providing a link to the presentation recording or the slides. Do you want to answer those live?
Yes. Yep. Yes. We are recording tonight's Q&A session and the information session. We will be providing a link to that to the public. I don't know exactly what format we're going to be doing that at this time, but we will be able to provide that to the community, and we'll definitely message that through our communications team. I know that when we get to our commission meeting on December 7th, and that would be part of the information that will be presented in the staff report for the item.
Okay, thank you. So our first, another question related to the topic tonight. What evidence do you have that the rail will have enough ridership to make it financially self-sufficient?
First I'll take that one. Thanks for the question. I know that there's been a lot of conversation and discussion in the community about the viability of the project and the actual ridership usage. So first I'd refer back to the previous studies, including the transportation corridor alternatives analysis that was done recently and the draft budget plan for that. We do show significant ridership usage through that work. The purpose of this project concept report is to build off that ridership modeling that was done in previous studies using the information that was compiled and provided in those studies, and then updating them to current situations and bringing in more additional and current information to those models to show what our ridership is going to be. So ultimately, we're going to present all that information to the public and to the commission, and we'll be having public dialogue and receive public comment and input on it. And the commission will have the opportunity to look at whether or not we move forward with the next step in the project after the project concept report is complete. And I think, Robert, was there something that you wanted to add on that as well?
What I was going to suggest was that's actually one of the fundamental purposes of the corridor ID process, particularly with step two. So what would be generated is known as a service development plan. And that particular document would look at everything, but not just the project cost, but it would also sort through the ridership, the operations and maintenance. It would be looking at schedules. So it would be a holistic document that would actually define the service. And at that point, you would have a more clear understanding of the financial viability of the project itself.
Thanks, Robert. And Shannon, I know that Caltrans is looking at stepping into step two in a few months. It's a little undefined at this point, but do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, I would just say that to the extent that there will be needed updates to ridership data and things like that, corridor ID will reconcile that for kind of the whole corridor. And I think one of the things that the state is interested in this project and has this included in the state rail network, where, not all kind of local and regional services do get included, it's because of the opportunity to leverage the connectivity to the statewide rail network at Pajaro and Watsonville. One of the things that we're really focusing on is the opportunities for rail to capture some of those longer distance mode share, longer distance trips in terms of mode share, to really have significant impact on reducing vehicle miles traveled. And so obviously there are connectivity, mobility benefits to the community, but really being able to help use all of our corridors to meet some of those statewide VMT reduction goals, I think is a huge opportunity. And we see that as an opportunity here in Santa Cruz as well.
Good, thank you. We have a question about the sales tax that was mentioned that it would be required. How much would that sales tax be? What percentage of the voting population would be required to pass the sales tax?
Great, I can take part of that question. And then Robert, if you can assist me with the other part. What we're looking to do is to utilize the project concept report, the findings of the study, to help inform that and to decide. Obviously, that depends on the cost estimates that we have for the project, as well as the operational estimates for the operational needs. What we're looking at is, we're looking at the 2028 timeframe for understanding what type of a measure that might look like. But just at this point, it's looking something on the order of a half cent sales tax measure. We have Measure D, which is our current local measure that helps support a lot of the great work that is being able to be done around the community for transportation-related efforts. That, as we all know, is not indefinite, has an expiration date to it. So we're looking towards the future. We're going to have a stable revenue to help fund the operations and maintenance of the ultimate project. Robert, can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. So typically a two-thirds majority, it's not a simple majority, but a two-thirds vote of the population is required to pass a local sales tax. The amount of the sales tax varies across counties. Los Angeles County, I believe, has four local sales tax measures all stacked upon each other. Riverside County, for example, has one. Riverside County's is a half cent. So these taxes vary. And typically what's required, you have to have a business plan that substantiates the projects that would be involved and where that sales tax would be focused on. It wouldn't be a willy-nilly tax, and it would be specific towards transportation.
Great, thanks, Robert.
Good, thank you. Our next question is in regards to the concept report. The question is asking if we could characterize the nature of this current concept report. Some have called it yet another feasibility study, but is that a mischaracterization?
Yeah, I believe that, ultimately the project concept report, as mentioned earlier in the evening tonight in the Q&A, looks holistically at what it would take to put an alignment and a concept into place. So it's looking not just on, could this be done, but were we to do that with this specific concept, what do those steps entail and what would it cost? What would the ridership be? How would that actually function? So, one of the things we're doing as we go into milestone three is looking at operations modeling. We're updating the ridership forecast. So it's not just, is it a feasible thing, but how would the service actually play out were it to be built and what alignment would be actually be using? So it's taking a lot of what we've done in the past through the previous studies, the feasibility study, the TCAA, the business plan, building on those elements and putting together really the meat and potatoes of what it would take to put in place. So obviously it doesn't get into our environmental document or into the final design or preliminary engineering, but it lays the foundation of what this service looks like that we could then build upon if we were to move forward with those steps.
Okay, thanks, Riley. This next question is somewhat related. It's about time the timeline, what comes next after the concept report, and as the corridor ID program starts getting involved.
Yeah,
great.
Jump in.
Go for it, Shannon.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, working closely with the RTC, we will be working with them to incorporate all of these inputs as we start the service development plan. I think there will be some initial overlap, but the idea is to eventually kind of fold all of this planning work into the corridor ID process so that we're able to, again, streamline it and then have access to the federal funding for planning, project development, and so forth. So yes, after this, it'll go into that corridor ID program where we'll have more extensive analysis in terms of, you know, refining some of the results that come out of this study, but then moving beyond that, even once we've selected, you know, some of the final alignment and timeline and phase projects and stuff, to start refining a financial plan, an operations plan, labor accruing, you know, some of the more near-term components to get us actually into operations.
Great. And Shannon, maybe I could ask you a little follow-up question. Corridor ID program is different than previous methods that we'd used to tackle and approach projects. You know, we would approach it with the project concept, and then we would go into the environmental document, and then we kind of would have to work our way through different each of those different steps sequentially. With the corridor ID program, we're doing the same thing, but it's streamlined more. You want to touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, so it's streamlined kind of between the phases and within the phases. So I'd say within the service development planning phase, even though the FRA has outlined the tasks in kind of a 1-9 sequential order, they have presented this as many tasks that can happen in parallel. So we don't necessarily have to wait until we have done all of our financial planning to move on to our environmental planning or whatever, as an example. So we're able to really build in efficiencies because these are long corridors in California that we have as well, right? It's not just Santa Cruz. This is part of the entire Central Coast corridor. And so we want to make sure that we can be moving things forward at the phase and the timing that is correct for each of the kind of sub corridors within the corridor, while also streamlining full efficiencies of looking at what the implications are for each of these sub corridors as we build out the entire Central Coast. And then, you know, I think the real opportunity is once you're in the program, you're in. So we are in, you know, so we don't have to reapply for service development planning. We don't have to reapply for preliminary engineering in NEPA. While there is still some discretion to the FRA in terms of which projects move at which speed, we are in this program. And so now the partners, all our partners on the coast, for example, are pretty much in this planning, project development, and environmental partnership with both the state of California and the Federal Railroad Administration. And, you know, those are the most significant opportunities for funding and then leveraging that funding into construction. And so I think we're really excited to be looking to partners that are in this program for how we can better save and utilize your local funding as match for components that really do require that local funding. And if we can save as much of that for construction phases and operations phases, you know, those further phases that tend to have bigger price tags, you know, that's what we want to be able to help each of the corridor partners do.
Great. That was great.
Yeah, we have another question related to timelines from a person attending at the RTC conference room. What is the timelines that we are looking for funding for planning, design, construction, or operations? Approximate years starting and for how long?
Could you repeat that one? It's got some nuance to it.
What is the timelines that we are looking for funding in terms of planning, as well as design, as well as construction and operations? So they want the timeline for all of those categories, and an approximate year starting for and for how long. So a start year for each of those and for how long.
Yep. So there's a little bit of uncertainty when it comes to the corridor ID program when we get to that step three phase. So we've been approaching the Zeppert project with the expectation that we would finish the project concept report in, you know, spring of 2025, mid-September 2025, and then have the ability for the commission to decide at that point, are we going to be moving forward into the preliminary engineering and environmental documentation phase of the project. And then Shannon, just a heads up, I'll be asking you like how that process is different with the Corridor ID program. But obviously with the Corridor ID program, the service development plan that Shannon was talking about before, that's step two. So we're fitting into that step two process, and Caltrans is working on entering in that process with the FRA. But we've got to finish that process before we get to step three in the Corridor ID program. So there's an opportunity, you know, the couple options before us would be, we could move ahead as the RTC commission doing that work in advance, is my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong, Shannon. Or we can wait until that service development plan is finished that Caltrans and the FRA working on together. And then we'd be within that pipeline that she's talking about to move into step three at the FRA's discretion, where we would undertake the environmental document and preliminary engineering phase.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'd say there's obviously we are all starting in different places before Corridor ID was established. So there is a little bit of a try and figure out how to catch everyone where they're at and not make people slow down or do redundant work, but continue to be within the confines of the law for Corridor ID as described in the bipartisan infrastructure law. And so I think, quite frankly, the FRA is still trying to figure some of this out. But the idea is to, you know, where we are not too far ahead on things, to roll them into this process so that, you know, local agencies, Santa Cruz, others, are not using your local funding that, you know, might be tied up or might be only available for other things, and rather utilize that state and federal partnership to, again, get in the program. Because once, basically, the FRA wants you to be, you can't get to step three through this program unless you do step two. So you can't skip ahead. You do need a completed service development plan that meets the requirements based on the FRA guidance to be able to kind of, you know, graduate into step three. And there's a lot of benefits to being in the program and having that joint federal and state support. And so that's why we're really working with the partners to figure out how can we, you know, even if it's maybe slowing things down on the front end, get you into a process that will ultimately accelerate the entire project development phases and get us into a more competitive pool for construction funding, which will ultimately get us to construction faster, even if there is, you know, potentially a slowdown at kind of the start of planning or the start of environmental.
Yeah. And Shannon, what's the time frame for the SDP process? You know, it's, you don't know for certain, but
yeah, we have not finished
best guesstimate
schedule and budget. But for Central Coast Corridor, honestly, a lot of work has been done utilizing the methodologies that the state wants to be using as defined in the rail plan. So there isn't going to be a ton of reworking that needs to be done. There will be some reconciliation between some of the studies. We had different base years, different things like that that need to be consistent for the entire Central Coast Corridor. But I still anticipate that, you know, we're looking to try and have this be a up to 18-month planning process. But again, that's getting all the way through some of that like detailed operations analysis and things that go beyond just kind of the infrastructure components of the project.
Great.
This is a question by RTC Commissioner Mike Rotkin. He's asking, what is the anticipated split between the state and local funder on the NEPA and provision engineering phase of this work described by the state?
Yeah. Perfect. I don't know that we have that answer to that yet. I think, you know, first step two, the state is prepared to fund the 10% match out of the Caltrans Division of Rail budget. This is a planning priority for us, and so we have budgeted to be able to do that on behalf of the five corridors. For step three, frankly, we didn't know the FRA was going to let us start moving into that so quickly, so we thought we had more time to figure it out, but they are having, whatever, some additional updated rules for existing intercity corridors. And so we are working that out. But I do think, you know, there will be more of a requirement from the local partners to contribute towards that 20% match. And it will probably be a little bit TBD, depending on the priority projects in each corridor.
Great. But the exciting thing, obviously, is that, you know, combined state and local match would be that 20% where the FRA would be coming in with the 80%.
Yeah, and that it'll basically be 0% match to the local agency through service development planning. So any funding that maybe was set aside for planning, governance, any of those components can be moved as part of that match, that 20% match for preliminary engineering and NEPA.
Yep.
Okay, he had an additional question in terms of ridership projections. Can we only use what the current ridership would be, or can the additional ridership created by development around stations and other parts of the system also be considered?
Shannon or Robert, do you know the answer to that question in terms of the corridor ID program?
Well, I can't answer it in the context of corridor ID. I can answer it in the context of a modeling exercise that we've used a number of times. I'm not quite sure at this point what model Caltrans would use, but essentially the FTA has a model called STOPS, and that's essentially a forecast. And some of these issues can be manipulated in terms of forming a ridership projection. Takes into account population and development, things like that, that we would get from the MPO and enter those in as inputs into the model. So not exact science, but there are methods to forecast. I know Shannon, you folks have a ridership model. Maybe you can speak to that. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, I would say, that we have exactly named a model yet for corridor ID, but the idea is that we would utilize a model that, yes, takes in more of these additional factors. We want to be able to capture the benefits from developments in and around stations. We want to be able to capture the benefits from connectivity at stations. So again, those kind of pulsed schedules. So in this case, within the local communities to local transit, but also at that Pajaro-Watsonville station with connectivity to future Monterey Regional Service, as well as the statewide network, which would just be a few stops down from the high-speed rail line. So a lot of those benefits will be able to be captured. The intention is to capture those as part of the ridership model.
Great. And just a plug for next Monday, tune in for our ridership approach information session where we can get a little bit more in depth on some of the ridership questions.
Okay, thanks. There's another question from the RTC conference room. In the presentation, you noted federal funding is less than requested. How much is expected to be requested for step two and step three? And what has been the current track record?
I think initially in Riley and Robert's presentation, that was more like at large and for the construction side. But at least in terms for step two and step three, we anticipate that the service development plans will be in the couple of million dollar range. We don't exactly know. Again, we have not started our step two for any of these yet, so we don't have finalized scope, schedule, and budget. Step three will be project specific based on all of the work that comes out of the service development plans. We'll have a prioritized list of capital projects with associated costs for each of the phases. And then whatever those costs for each project for preliminary engineering and NEPA are will inform step three. I will say it is probably unlikely that we can move the entire bucket of step three projects from every corridor at once, because that will be hundreds of millions, if not more, dollars across the state. And so that is why they are prioritized, so that we can make sure that we're, getting the ones that are the most ready and the most competitive first, but that the FRA knows what comes up so that we can continue to fund those with kind of the next round of step three availability.
And one exciting thing about the Santa Cruz branch line is that we own the line. So some of the concerns and things that you'd have to go through in terms of governance and ownership things, we already have under our belt. So obviously we're going to work with exactly. Okay, Heliana.
Okay, next question. How does the presence or absence of freight service on our branch rail line affect the CID process, if at all?
Not really. I mean, again, because the RTC owns it, we can account for it upfront as part of our planning for either, temporal separation or physical separation, or not using it for freight at all. Those decisions can be made because the RTC is the host railroad. I'd say regardless, though, for all of our corridors and like for the rest of the coast, there will be very close host railroad, freight railroad coordination with Union Pacific and, you know, in Southern California, BNSF. So that is built into the process at large for the corridor, but we, you know, that's already taken as one of the inputs and kind of parameters for the ZEPR project, and we'll just carry those into corridor ID.
Great, thank you. There's another question related to the Santa Cruz branch line. It was mentioned that the state has already provided matching funds for the corridor ID program. How much of that is for the Santa Cruz branch line, and where did that funding come from?
I mean, the Santa Cruz branch line is part of the Central Coast corridor, so I don't know that we have like sub corridor budgets necessarily, but that, like I was saying, the Caltrans Division of Rail budget includes the 10% match for all five of the Caltrans sponsored corridors.
Yep, I think I'll piggyback off that. There's two efforts going on. One is ZEPR, our kind of project concept report effort that we're undertaking as the RTC, and then Caltrans is taking on the step two or step one and step two corridor ID development processes. So Shannon's referring specifically with that 10% match to that step two process, the service development plan, where Caltrans is leading that effort and providing that 10% match, with the FRA providing the other 90%, and us as the locals aren't doing anything to capitalize on that in terms of funding. Obviously, participation and collaboration is key. But then the ZEPR project is separate at this point in terms of the project concept report. We're doing this work to really look into what it would take to put a concept service on the branch line. And that funding we do have, just off the top of my head, you know, it's about a little over half, maybe 60% does come from the state through a couple of different sources. And then we have the local Measure D providing the remainder of that.
Okay, thank you. Are newly emerging transit technologies that do not require the use of rails being considered?
So the use of, so just to reframe what I heard, a question is whether or not emerging technologies that don't require traditional track rails being considered. So at this point, you know, for the ZEPR project, no, we're not considering alternatives. The commission directed the staff to look specifically at passenger rail service, traditional passenger rail service for the ZEPR project, and what that would look like for the concept for the service from Pajaro to Santa Cruz. And in terms of the state's effort with the state rail plan and the service development plan, so that's using intercity rail, which would be on traditional tracks.
Okay, thank you. While it's common for projects not to be entirely funded in any given grant cycle, it's very rare for state and federally prioritized projects to not be completed. Don't most projects who get incomplete funding get the rest of their funding in addition to grant cycles or some local money? And this is from Faina Siegel.
So Faina, I think I'm going to try and rephrase that as well. So obviously a project doesn't get funding all up front, right? So we don't have funding to do the planning, to do the preliminary engineering, to do the construction and operation. It comes in chunks, right? And I think what you're asking is projects that are kind of further along, projects that have a lot of investment into it. In the end, like, you know, we see those as being really likely to move forward. You know, Shannon talked about it in her presentation about these projects that, you know, once there's a readiness criteria that's looked at in the corridor ID program. And so those projects that have kind of all these boxes ticked that have certain funding things in place, they are considered more ready and looked upon more favorably through the corridor ID program specifically. And so those ones kind of come to the top in terms of what the FRA might fund. So I think the answer to that is like is a provisional yes. You know, projects that come along and show that they've been doing the work and are ready to move forward, those are the ones that are more likely to get that prioritized funding.
Thanks, Riley. This question is from Michael Monterio. When will you have a reasonable idea of the total cost to Santa Cruz of the finished project?
Okay. So again, the project concept report, we're going to have the probable construction costs as part of the ultimate final report that's coming out next year. We're going to have those preliminary probable cost estimates in the winter. So we'll be coming to the community for input on those and discussion on those in just a few months. Obviously, there's a little bit of flexibility or a little bit of unknowns when it comes to the construction probable cost estimates. Robert, maybe you want to chime in on that, but we do the best we can at that point.
Well, again, I want to backtrack a little, Riley, because with the previous question, I think maybe a word to keep in mind is project segmenting or phasing. So the Corridor ID program is starting to orient itself, particularly in California, towards phasing of projects, because obviously, if you come to the table with $5 billion plus rail corridor projects, there's no feasible way that they'd all be built in the near term. So how do you go about prioritizing it? And then it becomes the readiness factor. What I would say with respect to this question, you move through the project concept report. That'll kind of give you a 100,000 foot view. Then you get into the SDP and you'll get far more granular on your cost estimate. You'll be down at the 20,000 foot view. Then once you get into preliminary engineering, you're going to define it even more. So it's a series of steps that really begin to identify what the actual cost of the project's going to be.
Great. And that's really good. Thanks for that additional information and kind of background, Robert. And but as I mentioned before, I think the community discussion is really going to be able to talk about real numbers when we come out with the draft probable cost estimates in the winter. And then when we get to the final concept report later in 2025, we'll have some really, firm numbers to put forth and know what this is going to take.
Hey, we have one more question from the RTC conference room. It is, could the Corridor ID program help fund the EIR for the concept report?
I'm actually glad to get this question because this is a question we have that we are trying to answer right now. I think in part, obviously, there are always some benefits, some efficiencies by completing CEQA and NEPA clearances at the same time. And so to the extent that we can align these processes, that's what we want to try and do. But we want to make sure that if the answer is no, that we're still able to utilize all of that work and make sure that the FRA will count this, towards all of the things that we need to do in the service development, planning to expedite that and hopefully get into the federal environmental clearance sooner. There may need to be some working that out between the RTC and Caltrans, and we're working to figure that out with the FRA soon. And this is getting back to what I was saying earlier, that we may have to slow some things down at the beginning to get us into the appropriate processes that will then expedite things on the back end and actually get us to construction sooner. We obviously want to keep things going as quickly as we can and use the money as efficiently as possible.
Great. Thank you, Shannon. That brings us up to just before 7 o'clock, which is our scheduled ending time. Just to let everybody know, recording, the presentation today and the Q&A and the info sessions was recorded, and we will be able to provide that to the public. We will keep everybody in the know on to when that gets published and how it's going to be made available. Things that you can do to stay involved so that you make sure that you get updates such as that information is to sign up for our mailing list. You can sign up online at sccrtc.org/Zeppert. You can also go to our project website, which is sccrtc.org/Zeppert, where you can get additional updates and see what we're doing. You can also email us at zeppert@sccrtc.org to find, you know, ask additional questions, get additional information. And you can just sign up as well for our RTC mailing list, generally speaking. And I wanted to say a big shout out to our guests. Thank you so much to Shannon Simons, Caltrans, for joining us, telling this exciting news about the Port ID program and what it is and how it fits into the Zeppert project. Thank you to Robert for your knowledge and expertise on funding and opportunities, holistically speaking, and for our fantastic moderators and interpreters. Thank you so much for all that. And as a final note, we didn't get to answer all of the questions from the public tonight. What my team is going to do is look to see how we can answer some of those questions that weren't answered, and then get some information out to the public regarding some of the things that we weren't able to touch on tonight. So stay tuned for that. Sign up for those mailing lists so that we can be in touch. All right. Thank you all.